So my name is Ole Nydahl. I'm a Lama. I'm from Denmark, and I'll be speaking on relationships. And I know that in the modern world there are other kinds of relationships than the one I'll be talking about here, the bisexual, homosexual, and so on. But, you know, you should only speak about what you know about. And I've only had heterosexual relationships myself. I've never held a gentleman in my arm at any time. So, I mean, I wouldn't be able to say much about that. So when Jim meets June or vice versa, it's always felt to be a very personal thing. You know, every time we think, oh, this is very special and this is very unique and unusual and so on. And, of course, it's also felt like that. But if we zoom a little bit out of the present embrace, you know, and go out and we look at other beings, we look at what's happening everywhere around the world, we'll actually notice that it's not nearly as personal as we think, that it seems to be general principles that meet and unite. It really seems that where space experiences its potential, where the totality sees what it can really contain and do, it goes into duality and meets again in a oneness. It goes into hot and cold. It goes into near and far. It goes into sweet and sour. And where the things come together again, where there is a union again of whatever is said, then there's like a quantum jump in experience. It's also with certain small parts of the atom, gluon, lepton, I think they're called, when they are brought apart, smashed together again, and then a lot of new dimensions, a lot of new things happen, and so on. So every time we go out into two and meet again with one, then actually there is a growth, an experience, something is learned, something is developed. And this is nowhere more visible than in the meeting of female and male. Here we actually can see two whole worlds coming together. I'm not going to tell you about the physical joys and good experiences about union, right? I don't need to tell you about that. You all learned that. I'm sure you heard that and hope you tried it often and so on, and it's a part of your life. So I'm not going to tell you about that. What I would like to tell you about, though, is how female and male come together on some levels where we are usually not aware. Because there really are levels, you know, which we are very rarely conscious of, and where there's a chance to make a lot of new things come out of our lives, a lot of growth, a lot of new meaning. What there is here, for instance, is the inner level. There's an inner level, we call it emotional, we call it having to do with feelings and state like that. And there is a secret level which has to do with being, you know, with essence, like that. So on the outer level, how the sexes meet, you know, I hope you all find out for yourselves and enjoy that. But what concerns the inner level, I would like to give you a few pointers out because it is meaningful. I know that things are changing very much, that the man doesn't need his big muscles for survival anymore, that the woman doesn't spend most of her time having children, right? I mean, things have changed. So the man lost a lot of his muscles, you know. If he doesn't go and build them up in the gym, you know, he probably won't develop much of that. And the women also, you know, I mean, they start doing all kinds of things that the men used to do because they know how labor-saving devices and so on, so they can do all kinds of things. But still, you know, if we go beyond that and we really try to see if there is something essentially male and female on the level of feeling and inner life and so on, we probably will see that there is. There is. It's not just something cultural, something created by a certain environment or certain methods of production or reproduction. It's also that there seems to be something deeply feminine and something basically male. And what would that be? Well, all the different cultures, you know, ascribe to woman this thing called intuition, this thing called wisdom, going beyond concept, an idea, this kind of wisdom which appears from being one with the things. You can call it fuzzy logic, as they might do at the time being, you know, or whatever. Anyway, it's a kind of experience which comes not through any special thought processes and so on, but which is more experienced through a kind of intuitive feeling of the world around us. And here, if we look at this kind of intuitive feeling and so on, we will actually see that there are five kinds. There's one which we call mirror-like. There's a kind of immediate understanding which just reflects things, you know, the way they are. Nothing is added, nothing is withdrawn. There is a thing called, equalizing wisdom, really understanding that all things are composed and put together of lots of conditions which also change and disappear again. There's a third thing which we could call discriminating wisdom, where we can see things singly, one by one, but at the same time we have the whole totality. And even more than that, we have the wisdom of experience, which is actually jealousy. If we transform jealousy, this is what comes out. And there is the wisdom of experience, which ties one thing to another like that as a whole sequence of affairs, of events that one can clearly follow and look through. And finally then, there is of course the intuition itself, that wisdom which pervades everything and goes everywhere. And if we ask what these different wisdoms are, they are nothing but our old disturbing feelings that reformed, right, that became better. Actually, all the things that make trouble for people, their inner difficulties, they're really like dirt, which will become compost. They are like coal dust, which can be compressed and heated into diamonds, you know. I mean, all these different things are there. And that mirror-like wisdom is nothing but the feeling of anger, which was allowed to disappear back into space again. And where it disappeared into the space of our awareness again, without us having reacted, then that mirror-like wisdom appeared. At the same time, the equalizing wisdom showing all things as being together is actually nothing but our pride, which changed from being an I'm better than you pride into, wow, isn't everything amazing pride, you know, and in this way became all-encompassing. Then the discriminative power, the power to see things singly and as part of a totality, is nothing but our feeling of attachment, which is transformed. The wisdom of experience is jealousy, which is lifted to a level where we wish everybody all the things we are jealous of ourselves. And in this way, this feeling is liberated into that. And our basic ignorance, you know, that ignorance which is stopping us all the time, is actually becomes the state of intuition. So if the man, right, on the inner level, on the level of openness and sharing the world, you know, also on the level of ideas and concepts and so on, if he opens to the woman, if he goes to her like to a temple, if he goes in with all his antennas out, with all his receptivity there, then this is what he'll learn. He will get these five wisdoms. This will be her gift to him. And the same way, if the woman goes to the man, also with great openness, with great interest, with great, you know, with great feeling inside, what she will get will be four kinds of activity. She already has some, of course, in her daily life, handling family and everything and so on. But she'll get it in the big way, reaching out through politics and power structures and society and stuff like that. And what the woman gets from the man here is like four activities. First, the pacifying one, or giving peace, bringing peace and security. That's for the people who are a little bit like broken eggs, you know, and that's what you have to do for them. Then there's the other activity which you get from the male, is the increasing, the spreading activity, like everywhere, doing everything, getting things together, getting things to move and develop and so on. The third activity is a fascinating one, you know, like making that impression, you know, really, you know, that power. And the fourth one is a powerfully protective one, you know, the one you can always trust. And if the woman stays close to the man, if she goes to him, you know, and absorbs his essence, his power, and so on, she will also receive that. Of course, there are different types of men. They're the slightly more pear-shaped men. They usually take care of the pacifying activity, peace-bringing activity. Then there is a more like mice, you know, all over the place, handling and doing things. They do the increasing one. And they're the heroic types, you know, that usually take care of the fascination. And then there are the types you can trust when all the other three have run away, right? Your real friend, the protectors, right? The ones who really stay there and they stay with you and you can trust them. Maybe not always dressed in the newest fashion and knowing what is in or hip at the time, but real friends, right? Like that. So these are the qualities we should try to learn from each other's on the inner level, where male and female should really try to come together there, and we can. And of course, there have been great yogis who found women, you know, of all the different kinds, great yoginis who found men of all the different kinds, you know, and learned from the special wisdom or the special activity that they had increased that was like their special gift to the world, their special thing. But actually, if you should happen to love your local Jane or Jim, you know, and not so bent on going out and meet anybody else, which is, can also be healthy, unhealthy at these days, right? Then if you stay with one partner and you go deep there, you will also develop all the qualities there. That is how it is. You know, everybody has a whole essence. It's, of course, you will first get that which is on the surface, but gradually all things will filter out and filter up. And then there's a secret level where you also can make a distinction between male and female. The female here is compared in Buddhism to a lotus flower. Lotus flower, something warm, living, kind, which would like to hold something, you know, an open lotus flower, which is there to hold. And the male is compared to a diamond who gladly shines by himself, you know, and, you know, who is satisfied with that. And here, both, this is also not good enough. A lotus flower that holds nothing is a pity. A diamond, you know, that just shines for itself is also not very meaningful. So here again, we should try on the deepest level, we should try to get that space, which is basically feminine, and that joy, which is basically male. And we should unite them so that the man leaves the union, leaves the love, leaves the relationship. I mean, not leaving like going away, but leaves the encounter or the coming together, you know, with a lot more space. And the woman leaves the meeting or the encounter or the lovemaking with a lot more joy, right? Getting that together on all these levels, this is really what it's all about. This would be the deep meaning that we should try to get. This should be like the really the lotus and the diamond. So we males and females should go to each other's, you know, like we like to a pure land, like to a holy thing. We should open ourselves to each other's. We should learn from each other's as much as we can. And we should try to make each other's grow. There are four kinds of love that are useful. Of course, there's also love that's useless. Expecting love, controlling love, more tomorrow and yesterday love. Narrowing down love, you know, love where we try to make others confirm things and stuff like that. This, of course, is useless. It makes everybody unfree. But there are four ways that a beautiful relationship, man, woman, and so on, can emanate out into the world, you know. It can become a love, you know, which is basically love, a sharing between two healthy individuals and both gain. Even if the man may just bring one third of the total possibilities, a woman may bring another third, right, the other, then the third third will simply happen through the energy field which has been created. Because space is not a black hole or nothingness, because space contains all qualities. Then, like this, the part that neither of the two brought will appear by itself. So this I always consider very important. I'm actually very glad when my students go back hand in hand, go home, and I can imagine that they'll have a happy night and share and be good to each other. So I'm always very happy about that because it really means there will be some growth. Both of them will have something given, right, out of space itself, whatever it is. Then this good kind of love, you know, which also expresses itself as compassion. And compassion means giving also when you have more, right? But it doesn't mean in order to keep somebody dependent on you. It doesn't mean, you know, with the idea I'm better than you. But just generally sharing is a general flow between two individuals, two beings, with the general experience that both will have more to give in the end, right? Like a flow, like, you know, from money from America to Mexico, with the hope that Mexicans, you know, will get a better economy and everybody will benefit. I mean, stuff like that. This kind of compassion where one shares freely like that, that is the second thing. Then the third point is actually what we call sympathetic joy. And it may sound funny, you know, that, I mean, non-Buddhists probably wouldn't consider that a feeling of love. I mean, sympathetic joy, it would mean that being happy when the Russians were liberated under the first time of Brezhnev and stuff like that. It's things that haven't got anything to do with us. But in Buddhism, being happy about something that happened somewhere else, even though it has nothing to do with us, is fully included in love, in the idea of love and compassion, and it is called sympathetic joy. And finally, then, there is the thing we call equanimity. And this, you know, for a Westerner, equanimity, what has that got to do with love, right? But it means that we know that everybody has the Buddha nature, even a Khomeini, even a Pol Pot, a Stalin or a Hitler or whoever, that somewhere behind all their crazy dreams and their pain and their, you know, their sickness and so on, that there is some kind of space, you know, which means that one can be aware of something. You know, there is a space making perception possible. And there is a radiant clarity which can no one understand. If we really know that, that behind the mirror, even of that, behind even the sickest pictures in the mirror of somebody totally sick, that there is this radiant possibility, this chance for knowledge and so on, then actually, you know, that would be equanimity. So generally we are advised, you know, if we can get all those feelings together, it's very good.
And how can we keep attachment out of relationships?
Well, attachment is actually a sign that one wants to take something. And it would be smart to start any relationship from a rich basis. Like really right from the beginning, look at that being one is becoming interested in and just decide, oh, that woman or that man, I will make them into a prince or a princess, you know, I'll get all that potential out of them. I will really show them how wonderful they are. I'll really, you know, play them like a beautiful musical instrument or whatever. I mean, that one begins from the feeling of richness, that one basically begins with the feeling, here is some potential, you know, not what can I have and will she wash my socks when I'm 64 or whatever, you know, or anything like that. But a completely other thing, wow, here's a human being I can share with, I can make him or her grow, I can get their power out and stuff like that. I would begin always from a rich position. That, I think, is very important.
How long should someone stay in a difficult relationship?
Yeah, how long should one stay in a difficult relationship? I'd like to quote Somerset Maugham, right? As long as you would freely use their toothbrush. As long as you could use your partner's toothbrush, the relationship probably functions. And when you can't do that anymore, it's probably over, right? It's a question of very deep, you know, sensual stuff. It's a question of how the body smells, how you react to the body. It's a question of so many different things. The things with attraction and so on, it's like a very, very many-sided thing. It doesn't happen straight out of the... It's more out of the chemistry book than out of anything else. So one has to really go by that and try to feel, you know, how long am I attracted? And as long as you're attracted on the most basic level, then try to work through it. And when suddenly you look at each other and a brother looks at a sister and vice versa, right? Then try to float into a really good friendship and so on. People who separate should always separate as friends, because If one separates his enemies, then all the things that one learned during that time in that relationship is somehow cordoned off and blocked in one's mind. And this means in the next relationship, one probably has to go through all the same problems again. So the important thing is when one leaves a relationship, it's always as friends, and one still has access to all the experiences was there. And in one's next relationship, one can move on. One doesn't need to go into the same Disneyland again, into the same drama. So for that reason, always leave as friends. Leave when the basic physical attraction has gone, but stay friends as long as possible. And of course, if they're children, that's something else, right? If there are children, you know, one has invited somebody to the party, right, as you can say, or somebody came without being invited, but now they're there, right? If that, you know, is, then it's very, very, very important that one really keeps a good relationship, that the child really feels that the parents respect each other, that they're friends, that they hold together. If a child is being made the messenger of bad rumors between the parents, this is evil to do that. This is really bad. I mean, this really pulls their little hearts out. So especially if they're children, the parents must respect each other. The father must talk nicely about the mother and vice versa when the child is there. Nothing else. It's very bad if one doesn't do it.
Do bad situations in relationships stem from old karmic links?
Well, you see the funniest couples, you know. You see elephants and giraffes. You see everything all over them. You see the funniest combinations of people. When you look at what falls in love with what, you know, you just hold your head sometimes, right? So, I mean, basically, of course, it has very little to do with reason. It's karma. It's actions from former lives. And if we've done some good things together in a former life, we will have a nice relationship. And if we harmed each other in former lives, we will have a difficult time. So, as in all other things, be kind, think of others, do all the simple things your parents told you, right? Be nice, right? And that will then build good connections for future lives and benefit everybody. Thank you.